Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We'd like to welcome our live audience at the Orthodox Union for this broadcast today, and to listeners around the world, to a program of questions and answers on Pesach brought to you by the Department of Community Services and the Kashrut Division of the Orthodox Union. With us today, we have two special guests who are going to be fielding questions from the audience. We have Rabbi Yoel Schoenfeld, Rabbinic Coordinator and Group Leader in charge of oil and oil-related products for the Orthodox Union. Rabbi Schoenfeld has been with the OU for the past 23 years, and this morning was a guest on Nachum Siegel's JM in the AM radio program regarding all sorts of matters for Pesach. For those of you that would like to tune in, please do so. You can archive the program on www.jminintheam.org. Rabbi Schoenfeld is also the assistant rabbi of the Young Israel of Kew Garden Hills. For those of you that are around the world listening to this program, please note that on our website, www.ouradio.org, we have numerous articles and presentations with respect to Pesach. You'll be able to download the guide for Kashrut Passover foods for 5767. We have a listing of candle lighting times, and we have the basics of Pesach that are covered throughout our website, and we urge you to please proceed to the website at your earliest opportunity to find out quite a number of very pertinent items related to the Pesach holiday. I'd now like to introduce Rabbi Schoenfeld for his opening remarks, and then Rabbi David Polsky is going to be joining with Rabbi Schoenfeld in addressing questions related to Pesach. Rabbi Schoenfeld.
Thank you very much, Frank. I know time is of the essence, so we'll try to get to the issues as soon as possible. I think the main purpose of these types of presentations is really to inform people, and I think that the more that they are informed, the more that they know that Pesach does not have to be the foreboding holiday that it appears to be, especially to the women in our world, that sometimes go beyond the call of duty, as they should and they are wont to do, because Yisrael am kedoshim haim. But I think the more that we know about this yontif, the more sometimes it'll be easier. There's Rabbi Berkowitz in Eretz Yisrael right now, who's made it a campaign to let people know that you don't have to go completely crazy with a lot of these things. There's a lot of misinformation about Pesach. Paper towels and plates that are said that have, you cannot use them on Pesach. And as the OU guide says very clearly, it's just not so. The halacha is a very sane system, and there's no reason to actually make a mockery of halacha in many cases as it comes to Pesach, even though we're machmir in other cases where we may not, but we have to keep it in the bounds. Now, I want to make note of Rabbi Schreier, Dov Schreier, who's in the audience as well, who together with Rabbi Singer mans the Pesach desk throughout the year. But I am very honored that I was asked to speak, primarily, I guess, because I was on the Nachum Siegel program this morning. And also, I'm very honored to share the podium with Rabbi Polsky, who really does a yeoman's job throughout the year, and particularly as it relates to Pesach. So if we are going to start off, I guess we'll refer to some of the questions that were put to us, Frank. Is that correct? Okay. So
first question, is it true that it is mutar to use non-Pesachdik milk and non-Pesachdik water that was purchased before Pesach because any chametz within either would be too small to see or would be nullified as part of the Biur Bitul Chametz declaration? Rabbi Polsky is going to respond to this question.
First, before I begin, I just want to mention that in addition to OUradio.org, I also want to turn your attention to OUPassover.org. On OUPassover.org, in addition to being able to download the Passover guide, you'll also be able to find the answers to very, very frequently asked questions, not only those which I'll be discussing today, but also frequently asked questions that come up also for the Passover season. So I just want to emphasize OUPassover.org is one of your other main Passover destinations. First, with regard to one of the questions was bottled water, right, Frank? So with regard to bottled water, actually, there's nothing that could go wrong whatsoever. And so for that reason, you don't even have to rely on Bittul in order to buy bottled water for Passover. It just doesn't require any special Passover supervision. Therefore, with regard to water, no Bittul is necessary. However, with regard to milk, milk is something else, and it is true that with respect to the halachos of Passover, one of the halachos of Passover is that if a tiny piece of bread were to fall into something during Passover, the whole entire mixture is forbidden because chametz is aser b'mashehu. It's aser even in a very, very tiny bit. However, one of the other rules of Passover is that this does not apply if chametz gets mixed into something before Passover. So for that, if chametz gets mixed into something before Passover, the rules of Bittul B'Shishim apply. And for that reason, we have this thing with regard to milk, that in general, it's probably better to not rely on Bittul with regard to various items with regard to Passover. However, people need milk. And with regard to milk specifically, there are vitamins in milk. Very often they're derived from kidneys. In theory, they could be derived from chametz. How often that is, I don't know. However, because people need milk, you should definitely just buy the milk before Passover, so that way any potential chametz in there would be nullified. With regard to another common question regarding milk is lactate. Lactate, people who are lactose intolerant, they need lactate milk. So lactate actually does have one of the main enzymes within lactate is actually potentially chametz, or at least certainly very, very close to being pure chametz. However, this lactate milk is batel according to our poskim Rav Hershel Schachter and Rav Yisrael Belsky, and therefore someone can definitely use lactate milk on Pesach as long as but just make sure to buy the lactate milk before Passover.
Thank you very much. Our next question is with respect to omega-3, which is very popular now. In terms of the kosher omega-3 capsules that are sold throughout the year at the health food stores, may they be used during Pesach without any special marking of kosher lePesach?
Question is omega-3 capsules, non-chewable capsules. I'm not personally familiar with regard to the likelihood that they could be chametz or kidneys. However, I have a suggestion that people should consult with their personal rabbi. There's a difference of opinion with regard to non-chewable vitamins as to whether or not non-chewable vitamins have to be kosher for Passover or kosher all year round. So some great poskim believe that non-chewable vitamins, because you just swallow them, they're not considered a food item and they're not considered edible, and therefore they don't have to be kosher for Passover or kosher for year round anyway. However, other rabbinical authorities disagree and believe that vitamins are considered different from actual medicines because they have nutritional and food value as opposed to being pure medicines. If your rabbi tells you that the vitamin has to be kosher for Passover, one thing I could suggest is looking at a reliable Passover guide, for example, that of Rabbi Gershon Bess. But if your rabbi tells you that non-chewable vitamins and supplements don't even have to be kosher for Passover, so you don't have to worry about it. This also comes up a lot, just to discuss some other questions that are probably going to come up. The same applies to prenatal vitamins. If your rabbi might tell you that non-chewable prenatal vitamins, just like non-chewable vitamins in general, don't even have to be kosher for Passover or kosher year-round because you just swallow them, and there's nothing to worry about. I suggest that people ask their rabbi, and if their rabbi tells them that it does have to be kosher for Passover, I suggest that they look in a reliable Passover guide. But you should consult with. But certainly one thing that we mention in our Passover guide on page 15 in our medicine list is that, just want to emphasize, people should ask their rabbi and doctor before refraining from any vitamin or medication because of Passover, because it's because health is very important. And people shouldn't just go around saying, okay, I could refrain from whatever vitamins or pills. I could wait till after Passover. No, it's very, very important to ask your rabbi and doctor before refraining.
If someone is going to be leaving on Sunday for Pesach, when is the search for chametz conducted, and is a bracha recited?
I'm sorry again, the person is leaving when?
On Sunday morning.
Oh, so, okay. Bedikas Chametz is Motzei Shabbos. So they should be make. So what's the problem? I'm sorry, Sunday night, and they're leaving Motzei Shabbos? I'm sorry, they're leaving Sunday morning, sorry. So they should make the Bedikas Chametz on Motzei Shabbos like they would any Bedikas Chametz. The difference is they do not make a bracha. So, but they do with a candle, and they go around. They should put the 10 pieces around, but they just do not make a bracha. And the chametz, well, they have to take along with them. If it's a different time zone, they have to discuss that. But assuming they're staying in the same time zone, then that chametz has to be burnt. Either they appoint somebody to burn it for them, or they take it with them and burn it. They're going to a hotel, even. They just burn it in that area where they're going to be.
When searching for chametz, what foods are permitted for Passover for Sephardim?
When searching for chametz, the question was posed, when searching for chametz, what food is permissible for Sephardim? The fact is, when searching for chametz, the Sephardim are going to be in the same as Ashkenazim, because there is the line of divide between Ashkenazim and Sephardim is on kidneys, those legume type of vegetables that Ashkenazim don't eat. However, kidneys, you're allowed to maintain in your house. There's no problem by your roll, by your matzah. You're allowed to have it. You're allowed to have benefit from it. So there's no purpose for an Ashkenazi searching for kidneys, which he's allowed to have. So in terms of the search, there's no difference between Sephardim and Ashkenazim. In terms of what is defined as kidneys, okay, I'm not sure if we have to get into that now. But I want to make it clear that Rabbi Jurevel has uncovered a few years ago that rice in America, especially if it's been produced in America, but by law, rice that's distributed in America contains an additive, and I believe it's a riboflavin, and that riboflavin can have a carrier that's actually chametz gummer. So whereas Sephardim will eat rice, they're not aware, many of them, that it can be chametz gummer on the very rice. It's coated on top of the rice. It's not bottled. So Rabbi Jurevel has been gone on a campaign, the OU has for the last few years, to inform the Sephardic community and the Rabbanim, the Chachamim, that rice may be a problem in America for Sephardim too, unless you can get some kind of specially imported rice that circumvents that issue.
Question that has become popular in recent years is with respect to coffee. At one time, there were one or two brands of coffee. Now we have decaffeinated, regular coffee, flavored coffee. The ones during the year need hashgacha. So the question is, what happens during Pesach? Do these flavors need hashgacha if they have hashgacha during the year? And what types of coffee are permissible, including the decaf?
Okay, the question is first with regard to flavored coffees. Okay, with regard to any flavored coffees, anything with a flavor does require special Passover supervision. The reason being is that flavors, natural flavors, can come from any number of different things. Who knows, they could come from kidneys or even, in theory, chametz. And for that reason, anything with a flavor, certainly a natural flavor, requires special Passover supervision. However, unflavored coffees are different. But even so, even within unflavored coffees, it really depends. Ground, pure ground, undecaffeinated and unflavored coffee, there's nothing that could go wrong with it, at least based on our knowledge so far. Therefore, any pure ground coffee that's unflavored and not decaffeinated nothing to worry about, doesn't require any special Passover supervision. Also, I just want to emphasize, there's one thing which we put in our Passover guide this year so that things get left out of the gray section or the white section. There's something which we put in so that people don't get confused. It appears in the white box on page 23, in the white box in your Passover guides. If something gets left out of the Passover guide, please consult that. That should be the first thing to look at. Now, with regard to other types of coffee, that's something else. Now, with regard to instant coffees very often contain maltodextrin. Maltodextrin is something that could be derived from either kitniose or, in theory, chametz, and therefore any sort of instant coffee requires special Passover supervision unless it's specifically mentioned in the EOU Passover guide. With regard to decaffeinated coffee, that's also something that requires special Passover supervision unless otherwise explicitly noted. The reason being is that decaffeinated coffee is decaffeinated by means of something called ethyl acetate. Ethyl acetate is also something that is derived from either from kitniose or, in theory, chametz, and therefore any decaffeinated coffee also has to be specifically permitted.
Thank you. With respect to soy milk for adults as well as soy milk for babies, can that be used during Pesach if a person is Sephardic or not Sephardic?
Well, with regard, I don't want to talk about Sephardim right now, but what I would like to talk about is mothers of children who can't have any, who are allergic to milk, or lactose intolerant, or severely lactose intolerant. In terms of, I don't want to talk about Sephardim right now, but with regard to those people, with regard to babies or other people who actually can't have any dairy. So I would like to discuss soy milk. So soy milk, actually the main thing with regard to look for with regard to soy milk is that actually lots of soy milks contain barley. So you just have to read through the ingredients very, very carefully for one of the following sections. Actually, there's one soy milk which I saw contains barley flourless in the ingredients. Others have, there's a rice milk. I don't want to mention the brand, but if you look through the ingredients, it mentions gluten through barley protein. You have to look at that. Also, another thing to look for is something, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, hopefully Frank will be editing it to edit my pronunciation, something which I think is called beta amylase. Beta amylase is a protein derived from barley, and this also is the cause for soy milks to be sweetened. So if it has any of those ingredients, it's definitely a problem. However, otherwise, most likely for kids who really, really need it, they can assume, just look for very, 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 very carefully for those ingredients. Otherwise, they can assume, if it doesn't have those ingredients, any barley whatsoever in the ingredients, they could assume that's kitniose and they could use it. With regard to Sephardim, I don't want to posthume because the reason being is that in theory, even though it's most likely that the vitamins and things like that within the rice milk and soy milk are from kitniose and not from chametz, we can't absolutely guarantee it. One of the issues is people say, okay, the Orthodox Union, you certify it. How could you not know what's in there? The reason for that is as follows. The reason is because when we certify a product, we obviously have to make sure that can only come from a kosher source. However, if there's an ingredient or an item which we know for a fact it can only come from a kosher source, however, we don't know, but we might not necessarily know if it comes from wheat or if it's derived from corn or something else. So therefore, we might allow that ingredient, even though we might not directly know or keep track of where it comes from. So for that reason, we can't absolutely guarantee that a vitamin is derived from kitniose and not from chametz, and therefore, I'd rather not poskin for Sephardim.
There are a variety of paper plates on the market today. Some for microwaves, not microwaves. Some with paper plates that are elaborately coated, et cetera, et cetera. How does one distinguish which plates are permissible for Pesach and which are not among the paper items and plastic items?
As Rabbi Schoenfeld mentioned before, Anyone who has our Passover guide or can access our Passover guide on the internet should turn to page 15. On page 15, we have a whole list of inedibles which absolutely do not need any certification whatsoever. So if I'll answer this question right now, but I just want to emphasize anyone who has any questions regarding inedibles should turn to page 15 of our Passover guide, and you'll see things like laundry detergent and creams and mousse and shampoo and many other items which according to both our rabbinical authorities, Rabbi Herschel Schechter and Rabbi Yisrael Belsky, do not require any certification whatsoever for Passover or the rest of the year. You could use it for Passover, don't have to worry about it. Now, one of those things that is on that inedibles list is paper plates. In theory, I forgot whether or not it really is true. It's conceivable potentially that some of the paper plates in theory could be lined with some sort of kitnios. However, the Ramah writes in his Hagos on the Shulchan Aruch that at least he indicates that casual contact with kitnios is there's no problem with. And so therefore, certainly according to our two poskim, certainly in the case of these paper plates, which the coatings on the paper plates are completely inedible. You're not going to taste the coatings, and therefore, according to both Rav Yisrael Belsky and Rav Herschel Schechter, there's absolutely no problem whatsoever with the paper plates because any coatings are just completely accidental and they're completely inedible, and therefore they would be included in this Ramah and bottle, and therefore there's absolutely nothing to worry about with regard to paper plates.
For those of you in our listening audience who do not have a copy of the Pesach Directory, you may download this from www.ou.org. Go to Jewish Holidays, Passover, and you'll be able to download the Pesach Directory along with quite a number of other items related to Yom Tov. We'd like to ask Rabbi Schoenfeld to share with us some information on new products for this coming year, for this year.
Okay, but I just want to pick up on something that Rabbi Polsky said on paper plates. What may be a serious issue is plastic gloves, rubber gloves, for dishwashing, and sometimes rubber balloons. But gloves especially, especially some of the cheaper brands of rubber gloves, you'll find that there's a coating inside. It's a kind of a lubricant coating to make sure that your hand doesn't stick to the glove inside. And sometimes it's a white powdery substance. That white powdery substance is some kind of starch. It could be corn, but it could very well be wheat starch. And naturally, you've got to have a serious problem there. And there, unlike the paper plates, it's there. It's substance and mamushes. It's for real. So what I just suggest is if your rubber gloves, if you use them, put your hand in and out and see if there is a powder that comes off with it. If there is, I would not advise you to use it. Some of the new items that we're introducing this year, if you go to page 60 on the directory, you'll find that there's a line of cereals, Dayenu, Kojel, Manischewitz, Savion, and VIP Master. These cereals are, what's new about them is that they're non-gebrucht. Well, many of them, that's true. I'm sorry. And I have to thank Rabbi Schreier for this information. Many of them are not gebrucht. So the world is becoming globalized, so gradually gebrucht is taking over the Pesach scene. And so you'll find many of the cereals non-gebrucht. You'll also find on page 69 Dr. Prager's breaded fish, just what your grandmother dreamed of, breaded fish for Pesach. But obviously it's breaded, I guess, I think with some kind of potato starch, but it is, and it is also non-gebrucht. Do we have time for me to go into quinoa?
Or yes.
Okay. So there's a very important grain that's on the scene right now that's called quinoa. It's spelled something like Q-U-I-N-O-I, a bunch of other vowels and consonants. There was a fellow in yeshiva. His name was Yaakov Pupko in Lakewood, and he was a little colorful character. He used to call up the operator, made a collect call. How do you spell your name, please? And he would say, P as in pneumonia. So, I don't know, quinoa, it's every letter that you can think of, but the proper letters. But in any case, quinoa, it is with a Q, is as follows. It's a grain. It's certainly not chametz. It's a little tiny pearly grain, and it's a little tiny pearly grain that is little smaller than a BB from a BB pellet. Each grain. It's a nutritionist. It's nutritional, and it's filling. And it tastes, they say, something like rice. And it cooks like rice. You boil it up and you use it, and it has a high value year-round. And for Pesach, it's a great item. Not chametz, as we mentioned. Is it kidneys? So here we have a machlokes ha-poskim. There's a difference of opinion between Rabbi Belsky and Rabbi Shechter, the two of the poskim for the OU. Rabbi Belsky feels this is kidneys. It has all the. It looks like a kidneys. It cooks like a kidneys. It grinds like a kidneys. It is a kidneys, and it quacks like a kidneys. So he says that it is kidneys because, just like mustard seed is in the fold of kidneys, because it's idgan. It can grind up and be used as a paste and as a dough. It's kidneys. That's his opinion. Rabbi Shechter feels, sorry, but we have no right to introduce new categories into the fold of kidneys, as Rav Moshe writes regarding peanuts. He says we cannot introduce peanuts. Peanuts, he was never known as kidneys, and why Rav Moshe felt that peanuts is not kidneys. The minhag is not, for the most part, not with Rav Moshe. The minhag for the most Ashkenazim, they do are concerned about peanuts, but that was Rav Moshe's line of reasoning. So Rav Shechter says, by the same token, quinoa, we have no right to introduce something new to this line of minhag kidneys. However, even if you hold with Rav Shechter, what the OU says is it's a separate problem. Sometimes the quinoa is stored in areas where chametz is stored. So what you got to do is treat it like svardim treat rice, putting aside the riboflavin issue. Svardim treat rice. Even svardim who eat rice, many of them check each grain carefully to see if there's no foreign substance that may be of a chametz origin. So spread it out on a sheet, look at it carefully, and I guess in that manner you can. There is one hashgacha agency that does endorse quinoa outright, on at least 50-pound bags of it, but the OU does not endorse it. For that reason, it's a suffix what it is, and they have the weak concerns. But if you want to eat it, that's the way to do it.
With respect to animals over Pesach, cats, dogs, birds, fish, it becomes an issue as to what to feed the animal that would be acceptable for Pesach. So how does one know which dry foods or wet foods can be fed to a pet during Pesach?
Well, unfortunately, the Orthodox Union, we were not able to prepare an actual pet food list. First, I just want to emphasize there is no problem. I don't have any pets. I'm very allergic. My wife is very allergic, so not really likely to have so many pets in the house. However, so I don't know what we would necessarily feed pets. However, what I can tell you is that you could definitely feed kidneys to your pets. There's absolutely no problem with getting any benefit from kidneys. No problem whatsoever. Therefore, you can feed kidneys to your pets. The only problem is feeding actual literal chametz to your pets. I've been looking at the Chicago Rabbinical Council on their website, and in their Passover guide, they have a list of dog and cat and other types of pet foods which don't have any chametz in there. Otherwise, you could just check the ingredient panel and just make very, 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 very sure that there's no literal chametz in those products.
I just want to add that. On the chance that there might be chametz, Rabbi Gold is saying maybe you should buy it from before Pesach. I guess it's not a bad idea. But if you see any cereal, one fellow showed me a can yesterday contained cracked barley pearl. Barley's chametz gomer. So obviously that you cannot have. But as far as just my own recommendation, if dogs, cats, you know, try to give it scraps unless you have some brand that you know only uses meat. For birds, you should use millet. Otherwise, bird seed could be chametz gomer. Millet is kidneys, and that works. And then finally, with fish, what we recommend, they seem to like it, is freeze-dried worms, because the standard fish meal that you buy in little containers does contain chametz gomer. So, freeze-dried worms, get them while they're still available.
Just want to mention again that the Pesach directory can be downloaded from our website on Jewish holidays, Passover, and also, for your convenience, We've printed the Sfirat HaOmer chart, which we have for those in the audience, as well as you can download it from our website, so you have every day and every date corresponding to the Jewish day of the Sfira. I would like to just share with you a thought. The Orthodox Union is quite concerned with reaching out to those that may be unaffiliated or marginally affiliated with synagogue and with Jewish life. We've embarked upon an outreach campaign for everyone to reach out. During Purim, Shlach Manos was shared by so many members of congregations with individuals that do not normally celebrate Purim. And we are asking you that this Pesach reach out and change a life. We are urging all congregations and individual shul members to reach out to unaffiliated neighbors, co-workers, acquaintances, friends. Invite them to your home for the Seder and give them a taste of the beauty of our tradition. I would like to conclude with a statement from Farank Magulis in a book that she's written called Off the Derech, an interpretation of the four sons of the Haggadah. She says that the interpretation, let's look at the four sons, but not as individual children, but as generations. The first generation is wise, so to speak, committed to halachic Judaism. The second generation rebels and moves away. The third generation is tum, simple, confused between the parent who does not observe and the grandparents who do. And the fourth generation is so far removed, it does not even know how to ask the question. The fifth child, his generation is no longer at the Passover table. Unfortunately, we are finding that there are so many people that are Jewish that are just not at the Seder table, that are not affiliated. And we're asking our listening audience to please reach out and invite those that do not celebrate Pesach in the manner in which you may celebrate Pesach to come to your table, to learn the traditions, to learn the beauty, and to experience Yetzias Mitzrayim. May all of you have a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Thank you all. Thank you to Rabbi David Polsky and Rabbi Yoel Schoenfeld for fielding questions today on our program.